Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hey, everybody. So this is the third and final installment in a special three-part series we've been presenting over the past few weeks. And so what you're about to hear will make a ton more sense if you first go back and listen to the previous two parts in your feed. They're just the immediate past two episodes. This series is excerpted from a podcast that we made a couple of years ago called Caught. It's about the ways in which young people who need help instead get trapped inside courts and jails and prisons. There are clearly a lot more people thinking about the ways that policing and criminal justice in general function in our communities today. So we decided to revisit one of the stories we told in Caught. It's the story of one young man and his journey through the system. Where we left off in the previous episode, he had just gotten out of Rikers, out on parole, and he was about to make a really classically teenaged-brained mistake, but a hugely consequential one. We pick up the story from there. I'm Kai Wright. This is the United States of Anxiety in a special presentation of Caught.
Every day I wake up, every time I go to sleep, I think about being locked up. I be having dreams.
Yeah, what happens in the dreams?
I just picture myself being remanded. They putting those tight handcuffs on me and bring me to the back room and lock me in the cell. And I'm doing time.
And then he did get arrested. He told WNYC reporter Jared Marcel that it was the stupidest thing he'd ever done.
When Z got rearrested, he'd been out for 7 months. Things were a bit bumpy at first. But since then, he stopped smoking weed. He landed a summer internship at a law firm, and he had a big rap competition coming up.
That's all you got? What you mean?
That's all. I just started writing yesterday. I thought it was like 2 a.m. I was tired.
Z felt vindicated. To him, these improvements showed that it wasn't him who was the issue. It was his environment.
When I was locked up, I was going through a lot of stuff. They thought I was just some crazy person turning up for no reason, but I was just so stressed out from not being able to go home, from the food you eat, that I was like really turning up.
And you got that corrected now?
Yeah, I got that corrected. I'm out in society now. You don't see me committing any more crimes.
Finally, he could move on with his life. He was hanging out with friends and talking to girls. Z calls himself a ladies' man, so naturally, when he met a girl on Facebook, he wanted to meet up with her. Z was at home with his mom that night.
Little girl started calling him. She decided she's going to jump in a cab from, she lives in the Bronx, and take the cab to my house.
They live deep in Queens, so that's not cheap. At the very least, $50. But like a lot of teenagers, they didn't plan very well.
She had called him downstairs and he came back upstairs and told me that, Mommy, she don't have any money. She was trying to hop out and the cab driver locked her in. And I just looked at him because I didn't have any money to pay for a cab. I guess he thought he was going to get the girl out the cab. That was his focus. And he got downstairs and gave the cab driver the little bit of money that he had left from what I gave him the night before. And it wasn't enough, so the cab driver took his money and kept the girl and tried to pull off.
So without thinking twice, Z put his hand inside his sweatshirt and pretended he had a gun. The girl got out the car and the driver left.
He's paying the consequences of that now. because even though he didn't have a gun, from just that little thing that he did, him acting like he had a gun, now he's doing a 1 1/3 to 4.
And it seemed like he thought he was doing the right thing at the moment.
He was trying to save the girl. Like, any problem that we ever had is him not being aware of what could happen after.
The cab driver reported the incident. 2 weeks later, the police showed up at Z's apartment and arrested him. They searched his place and didn't find a gun. Before this incident took place, he was this close to getting his felony record sealed. Z had what's called youthful offender status. This means your criminal record can be erased if you demonstrate good behavior. So all he had to do was stay out of trouble for a couple more weeks, and he would have been in the clear. But now, he's got another armed robbery charge tagged on top of that. The fact that Z says he didn't actually have a gun doesn't matter. Simply pretending is enough. Now Z's locked up on Rikers Island again, where his identity is nothing more than an inmate ID number.
So I'm going to visit him at Rikers Island. He's been in now for the past 2 or 3 weeks.
I'd never been to Rikers before.
The bus is full. People are trying to see their family.
As the bus drives us over the bridge onto the island, all you can see is a massive parking lot filled with cars. Rikers isn't just one jail. It's like a separate city full of prisoners.
Kiss my ass. All DLC employees, uniform and non-uniform staff, step off with your IDs.
Police first.
Corrections officers boarded the bus. It felt like at that moment we all became inmates. After going through several checkpoints, a giant correction school bus pulled up to drive us to the different jails. The officer driving the bus, the only white guy, was blasting some country song about breaking all the rules. I finally made it to Z's jail, the juvenile unit. We were placed in a small room with thick glass walls so the guards could watch us. Z was wearing a green jumpsuit that signified he was in the isolation unit. He had a smile on his face, which was nice to see, considering his situation. After the warm greeting, it was just like, this is where we are now. The last time I saw you, we were in the park talking about your new school. He regretted how things played out. I was this close, he said. That's the stupidest thing I ever did. When the guards came back for Z, I gave them a piece of paper with my phone number on it so he could call me. They told me they'd give it to him. They never did.
Just left. He got emotional. And it was very difficult to see him in such a vulnerable state of mind. And, you know, I tried to stay as positive as I can and give him advice on how to deal with it. But ultimately, I've never been to jail before. I've never wore handcuffs. I don't know. I was like claustrophobic, like it was, I couldn't wait to get out of there, you know, but guess what? He's still in there, and it's not looking like he's getting out anytime soon.
Another month passes before I see Z again, this time in court. His lawyer got him a deal. For pleading guilty and serving a minimum of 20 months, he'll be eligible for youthful offender status again. So it's still possible he could leave with a clean record. I wrote him a letter, hoping that would work to get him my phone number. Then one day he called.
Hello? Say that again?
I said, I've been better. I said, what you doing?
Man, you know, just working, man, you know? What do you mean you've been better? Tell me what's going on.
I got into an argument with my mom's earlier. She told me that commissary is a reward.
In jail, commissary is everything. It's like an account where inmates can get money sent to them. Then they can buy things they need, like snacks, deodorant, toothpaste, or things to pass the time, like a radio. But when you get in trouble, like Z has been, they could fine you, and that money comes out of your account.
He told me that you shouldn't get rewarded. You should be getting punished for doing something bad. And that just blew my whole day. I hung up on her. I said I ain't ever talking to her again.
You're never talking to her again?
Yeah, for the rest of my bit.
Come on, man.
Kia couldn't afford to keep re-upping his account every time he got in trouble.
I know you're frustrated. I know you are, man. I know you're not happy in there, man. I just want you to keep your head up and try to stay positive. I know It's tough. I know the food there is bad.
It's starting to get me a little bit tight. I'm about to start going, getting back in trouble and stuff. There's no reason to fake be good. And like,
but why would you start getting in trouble again? I don't understand. Like,
just to go back to isolation again, because like when I'm in like GP, general population, like I'm not getting the stuff I need, like commissary and all that type of stuff. Everybody got their stuff, and I'm just like, damn, like where the fuck my shit at?
Things have once again closed in for Z. Now at 17, going on 18, his ambitions of being a normal teenager, rapper, and high school grad are now reduced to commissary. Z decides that if he isn't going to have it, he doesn't want to be around other people that do. So he chooses to get in trouble, so he'll be sent to isolation. At Rikers, that's a separate unit, where juveniles don't get access to commissary.
So how is isolation better?
It's not, but I'm just going to be by myself. I don't got temptations and stuff.
What, like less people mess with you when you're in isolation, or?
No, I don't got temptations, like, when they eating and shit, to rob them. I ain't got nothing. It's bad enough I'm in here. Shit. I need something to make my time go by. Like, I don't know. This is crazy. Like, people don't know what really go on in here.
Z scheduled to be transferred to prison on his 18th birthday.
All right, do you know where you're going?
Upstate in a couple of days. And I'm not going to have I can't call nobody when I get there. Unless that one free call, that's it.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry to hear that, man. That's unfortunate. All right, man.
All right.
Take care.
All right. See you, bro.
He seemed different on this call. He wasn't that kid trying to be good, joking around. He transitioned back into what he was trying to get out of. And now he's just figuring out how to survive. I went upstate with his mom to go visit him. She told me about why he got sent there.
I sent him a package with a whole bunch of things that he liked.
His mom isn't always able to give, so when she does, it means a lot, because Z doesn't know when he'll be able to get again.
I wanted him to be normal and feel like, you know, he was home and he can eat and drink and stuff. So I went and I racked up on everything that he loves and put it in a box and sent it. And I guess some inmate was trying to take stuff out of his box, and that turned into an argument. They ended up fighting, and then the CEOs came.
Z lost control.
Ended up fighting the CEOs, and then that was all that she wrote.
She says it was serious enough to get him sent away to a maximum security prison. He turned 18 in 23-hour-a-day solitary confinement, and then spent the next 3 months there. How's that for a happy birthday?
Z is in Kasaki Correctional Facility, and he's just coming out of SHU.
That's the solitary confinement unit.
Been out of SHU for about maybe 3 days. So now he's in general population and just waiting to see how that's gonna be. I believe he has no idea where he is, how far he is away from home.
Yeah, so we're in the middle of nowhere and we're very far from New York City.
I just don't know what to expect, like, when I get there. So all I could do is just wait and see. He should be coming out all smiles.
This is it. This is it.
I'm gonna take a picture. It looks like a maybe campground.
Until you see the barbed wire fence. And you remember you're at a correctional facility. Maximum security, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. It actually looks just like on TV.
I'm literally afraid to get out of this car right now. I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm gonna check my pockets and make sure I don't have any contraband, because I would like to go home tonight. Okay, Jared Marcel signing out.
We wanted to record the visit.
Come on up.
But they wouldn't let us. Surprise, surprise. About an hour later.
All right, let's talk through this smoke break.
We started our 3-hour journey back home.
How did that go?
It was intense. I was afraid that my son is gonna get in trouble.
The visiting room was in a cafeteria, lined with vending machines.
I was a little worried about
that. Z came out with a green jumpsuit on, like when he was at Rikers. Except he was heavier, and his hair was grown out. Z got right to business. After being in solitary for so long, he was eager to have access to commissary. He had called his mom and made specific requests. She was able to meet some of them. She brought soap, toothpaste, and sneakers.
Describe the energy when he first came in the room.
He was anxious because he wanted to know if I got everything he said. And I'm just, you know, like all people, I'm going through it. So it's a little hard for me at this time, but I did the best I can. I mean, I came with sneakers.
When he got out of isolation, he borrowed things from other inmates. And now, he owed some people.
I think he was promising people stuff that he didn't know whether he was going to get. And that could cause problems.
Z had asked his mom to bring some black and mild cigars, but that's where she drew the line. When Kia told him that, Z became stone cold. He explained that he needed to repay what he borrowed, or there'd be consequences. This was the second week in a row he was supposed to pay up, and he didn't have it. He made it clear that as soon as he left us and went back to population, somebody was going to try to hurt him. And he said he wasn't going to let that happen.
Okay, I actually felt like his disability was there today. Like, I can see when he start talking, you know, a little crazy. Talking about turning up.
And Kia doesn't know if he has the ability to hold himself back. She brought some cash to put in his account, but there was no way the money would clear in time.
I can't explain what it is, but I can feel things. Anytime he's in a situation, anytime he's in trouble, I can feel him. I actually think the worst right now. And that's why I'm trying to get him to pay back these people.
So what was supposed to be a warm visit between mother and son became a tense moment over his safety. I had an idea that Z give up his new sneakers as payment. Kia spent the little she has to get him those shoes, and they were the only thing he really has to call his own there. So it was a tough decision.
That was a good idea, giving up his sneakers. I don't know if he's gonna go through with it.
He didn't want to, but ultimately agreed that was the best course of action.
I hope he does.
After getting that out the way, we got him a double cheeseburger from the vending machine and stuck it in the microwave. Immediately after finishing it, Z wanted another one. It was like a luxury to him. He washed it down with an orange soda and a honey bun for good measure.
I remember you telling me, you know, you used to give him money when he was a kid and he was always entrepreneurial, you know, and he would sell the candy and stuff. In an ironic way, it seems like he's trying to continue that kind of thing here.
He learned, like he stuck with everything I taught him, and he's using it to survive. He's trying to find a way to hustle and there to get what he wants. But I think there's other things along with it too. I mean, if he start doing that, he's gonna be known. I don't want him to be out there like that. That's when more problems come.
So, Jared, that was about 2 years ago, I guess, that you and Kia there are talking and leaving the prison. And so do you know what happened? Did he give away the shoes?
That I'm not sure of. I can't tell you. You know, those shoes meant a lot to him. And knowing Z, he's one of those kids that would, you know, be as resourceful as he can to not give up his cool, yeah, fly stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, so you've kept in touch with him over these 2 years. Where's he at now?
Z is still in prison right now. He got caught up in a couple of situations with other inmates a correctional officers, and unfortunately, he was forced to do his full bid.
Meaning he would have been released earlier, but he got in trouble, and so the full sentence that they gave him, he's got to serve that whole thing out.
Absolutely. About 3.5 years he has to serve out in its entirety.
Wow.
And he's been moved around, according to his mom, over 5 or 6 different times.
To 5 or 6 different prisons?
Minimum.
Why is that?
I think that the sneaker incident was probably one of many where he got involved in the whole bartering thing, and the rules are a little bit different on the inside. He said that, you know, a lot of people disliked him. He got into fights and people would start with him. And the thing about prison, there's no innocent or guilty. Like, if someone attacks you and you defend yourself, there's no self-defense, you know? Y'all are both going to get in trouble.
Like, if there's a fight, then everybody involved in the fight.
Yeah, that's how he describes it.
I mean, do you get a sense that it's related to, he talks so much about this turn up thing, you guys had so many conversations about how, while inside he would act out and get angry and in his language, turn up. Do you think it's part of that too?
For sure. It's familiar for him. He went in as a kid and that's not necessarily the environment for someone to grow.
What's it like when you call him? So you've been talking to him on the phone, I gather. What's that like?
So I lost contact with him for over a year. One day his mom just reached out to me and, she actually, got put my name on his list and allowed him to call me. And in many ways, he's the same person. He's exactly the same. He's the same kid I met when he was 16 years old. He's the same exact kid, and he still cares about the same things. He still wants me to update him on the latest fashion and the latest music. He was asking me about the rapper Pop Smoke.
Wants
to be a rapper. So it's weird talking to him in that environment when he's still childlike in many ways. Still green.
Yeah. Do you get a sense of his spirits? How's he feeling?
He's up and down. It depends, These phone calls mean a lot to him. They mean a whole lot to him. Like, these phone calls are his connection to the outside world. So sometimes if he'll call, me or his mom or one of his friends and they're unable to answer, it'll frustrate him, There'll be times where he calls me and I'm unable to answer. Yeah. I'll see the call and he'll call me later and you could just tell he was frustrated. He just needed someone to talk to or needed a pep talk or some advice. Yeah. He's been reading a lot of books, self-help books about business. He has a lot of questions, and a couple of weeks ago he asked me what college was like.
Oh, wow.
And, he wants to try to go to college and he said, is it fun? Are there fun things to do? I took him to my old college one time just to let him, meet, younger adults, and I took him to the radio station. We used the recording equipment and stuff, and that left an impact on him. And it gives him something to look forward to when he gets out.
When's he get out?
As of now, Z is scheduled to get out, I want to say, mid-2021. So he has about a year left on his sentence, unless something comes up. The last time we spoke, from then to now, he got involved in another incident with an inmate, and they sentenced him to 180 days of isolation.
So he's in isolation right now.
I don't want to call it solitary or isolate. Like, I know there's a difference, I think, but I'm pretty sure, like, he describes it like he's in a box and he has to spend his bid there.
Does he receive any kind of care or treatment? In earlier parts of his story, we hear about him in conversation when he was in the facility in Queens, with with mental health workers and that was helping him. Does he receive anything like that in prison?
Z doesn't
now?
Receive any type of assistance of any kind. He's just one of the people. His mother tells me they reject his medical history and his health records, like they don't acknowledge it.
When you first introduced me to Z, you know, I said that it was really hard for me to picture him as a quote criminal, certainly somebody a violent when he was just such a kid. You know, and we've now all followed his story with you for all these years now. You met him when he was 16 and he's about to be 21. I wonder what you know, and you started it as a reporter, you know, you're obviously friends with him now. What do you take from all this? What do you take from his story that here he is, that, you know, he was this 16-year-old kid and here he is, he's sitting in adult prison now as a 21-year-old 4 years later?
I feel like I've said this before, but it's like so important. When I think about some of the things that I've done at his age, I could easily have ended up just like him. And I wouldn't be where I am today. 100%. Some of the things that I've done, based on, I mean, at least compared to mistakes that he's made as a juvenile, and I could have easily served a couple years, and who knows how that would have impacted my trajectory. I know that oftentimes, you know, people battle internally with who they are and who society perceives them to be. And oftentimes it's a lot easier to be who people see you as. And I often tell Z, I say, hey man, listen, you're 20 years old. You're 21 years old. You know, I relate to him. I said, hey, G, I dropped out of high school at 14. I tried to go back later and eventually got my GED. And you know, like, I've seen a lot of the things he's seen, you know, and it just really makes you wonder, like, how we punish mistakes. You know, it's like some people get over their mistakes and some people don't. I'm not trying to defend the mistakes that he's made, you know, saying that he didn't deserve something. But we're talking about someone who went into prison at 17 years old, and they're going to get out when they're 21. They haven't had any, you know, help in terms of, like, you know, mental help and helping him get over some of the problems that he's having. And he's going to go out there. He's still scared. He says to me, he's legitimately scared about what's going to happen next. Will he be able to, you know, make the right decisions?
How's it work when you call him?
So I don't actually call him. He calls me through a tablet. And sometimes I don't know if it's because the COs are, they like him or they want to, you know, do him a little favor, but he gets to keep the tablet a little bit longer than he's supposed to sometimes. I remember one time he was like, oh man, I still have it. I'm going to try to keep it overnight. I said, come on, Z, you know you can't do that. He's like, yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm just playing. I mean, he's still a kid, right? Like, that's something that a kid would do, that a child would do. And it makes me feel really icky inside knowing that somebody who thinks like that is with, you know, grown, hardened criminals, some who have, like, killed people, or... Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Z, so I'm recording now, okay?
All right, yeah.
What do you want people to know about you? What do you want to, like, for the people out there that are listening?
Well, I'm just a person that's trying to get by. I'm humble, I smile, I laugh. I'm not a bitter, caring kind, and I'm not what the system betrays me to be, not a monster.
All right, Z, thank you, boss.
No problem.
Call me again at 6 if you want, all right?
All right, cool, no problem. Got you.
I'll talk to you later.
The caller has hung up.
Z was just one young person we chronicled and caught. You can hear all of the stories we told by going to caughtpodcast.org. It was a project that we did in partnership with the Radio Rookies program here at WNYC, and you should check out all of their ongoing work as well. We'll be right back.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
All of the young people in the stories we told shared their experiences with us at a time when they were truly terribly vulnerable, and we thank them and their families for that. And having heard their stories, all I can conclude, even now, is that we owe them a lot more than this. That we have just got to start thinking in far more radical terms about how to stop punishing and start helping people who do harm to others and to themselves. So in the absence of any tidy conclusion to this, because we are many, many, many years from a tidy conclusion, we asked Dwayne Betts to end for us on a poem. Here's what he chose to read.
All right, so for a bail denied, this poem really comes out of my experience working as a public defender in Connecticut, at least, when a kid goes to court, to adult court, the circuit court, his mother has to stand up and appear before him. So the poem is written from that perspective. For a bail denied after Avi. I won't tell you how it ended, and his mother won't either. But beside me, she stood in something neither of us could know. And now, all is lost. Lost is all in the ruins of what happened after. The kid, and we should call him kid, call him a fucking child. His face smooth and lacking history of a razor. Without promise of a mustache, he walked in a court of ghosts. And let's just call it a cauldron. Admit his nappy head made him blacker than whatever pistol he held, whatever casket awaited. The prosecutor's bald head was black or brown, but when has brown not been akin to black hair? To abyss and doesn't matter, black lives. If all the prosecutor said of black boys was that they kill. The child beside his mother and his mother beside me, and I am no one's father. Just the public defender, fiddle-footed here, where the state turns men, women, and children into numbers. Searching for a phoenix's embers, for angels born in the shadows of this breaking. This boy beside me's wings withering, fool on the brink of life and broken. And it's all possible, because one day or night or morning, this woman and a man, the boy does not call daddy fucked. And what would be called passion anywhere else called love. And the judge spoke and the kid kept confessing, I did it. I mean, Jesus. And everyone in the room wanted a flask. The boy's mother said, this is not justice. You will not throw my son into that fucking ocean. And she meant prison. And we was too powerless to stop it. And we was too damn tired to be beautiful.
Caught is a production of WNYC Studios and the narrative unit of WNYC News. This episode was reported by Jared Marcel and Courtney Stein. We partnered with Taylor Eldridge and Kirsten Danis from the Marshall Project. David Jeans and Sophia Palizakar contributed to the solitary investigation. A couple of special thanks are in order for this whole podcast. Melinda Siri Wardana has been our project manager, and Dwayne Betts is our consultant. You should really read his book, A Question of Freedom, a memoir of learning, survival, and coming of age in prison. And we animated one of his poems. It's really cool. You should check it out at caughtpodcast.org. Casey Means is our technical director. Hannes Brown is our composer, and students Taja Graves Parker, Alberto Lugo, and Sean Gary from Building Beats provided additional music. Rebecca Carroll and Jessica Miller were producers on the podcast. Kari Pitkin is our senior producer. Karen Froman is our executive producer. And I'm Kai Wright. Thanks for listening. Caught is supported in part by the Ann Levy Fund, the Margaret Neubart Foundation, the John and Gwynne Smart Family Foundation, and the Economic Hardship Reporting Project.